Talk given Friday, 6th April, 1979. We all know that ceaseless change marks the world process. There is nothing which is static. Everything is in process of change all the time, everywhere. That change may be fortuitous, haphazard, purposeless, even useless. Or the change may be a regressive change, in which case it may be harmful and even destructive. Or it may be a progressive change. Now, all growth, fruition, and fulfillment of any species in the world depends upon progressive change. What are the factors which influence progressive change? Consciousness is the most powerful influence in bringing about progressive change. Now, in the ordinary way, we all think of consciousness in terms of our mental states. Our mental states, our thoughts, and our feelings are the expressions of the inner consciousness. Inner consciousness remains unknown by the brain, always. It's a mystery. But it is this which is the power behind the throne. It functions deep down in the inner depths of our whole being. When one has an idea, when the senses function, observations are made and so forth, we know things in the manner in which we ordinarily know them. But that doesn't mean that we are really conscious of them. In the same way, when we study science or study nature and we talk about the immutable laws of nature and so forth, we are not conscious of them. We know them superficially. Now, it is very important to grasp this, because when one is really conscious, consciousness itself is at home with what you have realized as fact, as truth, then you can live that thing or you can do that thing without thinking about it or trying to remember it. This is the point about consciousness. Emphasize that, or rather see that as clearly as possible. When you are really conscious, then that's it. Supposing you are really conscious that the law of life should be love, should be wisdom, should be goodness, when you are really conscious that, conscious of it in this deep sense of consciousness, then you do never need to think about it. You never need to be conscious in the sense in which people in the world use the word conscious mind, unconscious mind, in the forefront of consciousness and in the background of consciousness and all that sort of stuff. There is the complete realization, the unification, which means that in terms of the mind itself, you are that which has been seen. And when you are that, you function, that functions absolutely naturally and spontaneously. There is no struggle, therefore, no internal conflict, no question of temptation or this, that, or the other making you stray from the right path. Now, perhaps this is a little bit unusual. One doesn't quite see things that way. But see it that way, and then what we have often considered, that the whole story of our spiritual development and our human fulfillment is a question of the transformation of our mode of awareness of all existence. Transformation out of the worldly, the limited, the finite, the mistaken, the sorrowful, the mortal mode of awareness into the transcendent mode of awareness. You see? You then will appreciate that point. This is why it's necessary to understand this as the first step in understanding the nature of consciousness itself. The next most powerful influence bringing about progressive change consists of our needs. Needs, not superficial wants and whims and fancies and whatnot, but our real needs, bodily, psychological, and spiritual is not quite the best word in the context, so I will say psycho-spiritual. And I say this simply because these needs do not exist in three separate compartments. They are all interrelated, intimately interacting, and they constitute one great whole of the total living person. Each leads into the other, both, now this is the difficulty of words, backwards and forwards. What I mean is our bodily needs and our so-called psycho-spiritual needs, they are all, each leads into the other two and interacts with the other two. It's not a case of up, down, forwards, backwards or anything. It is one great whole. It's only those who have experienced this peculiar sense of wholeness who can appreciate the fact that in terms of wholeness there is no such thing as direction, no such thing as comparison. It is just like the word perfection. You can't compare the perfection of a rose with the perfection of an ant or a tiger or a human being or anything. It's all absurd. And if the wholeness is there, the totality, nothing is more important or less important than anything else. It just has its own unique value as such. See, if he really can appreciate this sort of thing and live by it, an immense amount of unnecessary sorrow and suffering, and what is even worse, conflict within ourselves and perplexity that sometimes drives us crazy almost, all that would just disappear. Because we wouldn't start arguing, we wouldn't start searching with that spirit of, oh, what is the truth, that anxious spirit? It is the truth that comes to light within us. We don't find truth. Truth is universal. What is universal cannot be searched, cannot be found. It is the infinite. How will you search for the infinite? It's here, now. You have just to awaken to it in consciousness, not in thought. We can all think this sort of thing, but that is not the real awakening. That is not the realization, the living realization of fact or truth. You get the point? Yes. All right. Now, there are constructive influences which bring about progressive change. Health, upbringing and education, which means that parents and teachers themselves have to be fairly developed people, at least fairly developed people, in order that upbringing and education may be the right sort, the progressive sort, and good companions. It's a very important element. Good sense, which extremely few people have, and intelligence. Those are the constructive, some at least of the main constructive forces. The destructive forces are almost legion, but I will mention just a few. Ignorance, and the supreme ignorance is the fact that we are ignorant of our ignorance. We are ignorant of the fact that we are ignorant people. We think we are very knowing people, canny people, and all the rest of the nonsense. You see, but we are quite ignorant of our ignorance. And particularly, we are ignorant of the ways of the self within us, our own self. Then there are wrong desires and impulses, self-centeredness and self-indulgence, evil motives and vices, ill-breeding, wrong companions, and the sheer misfortune of deprivation and disease, bodily and mental, of parental stupidity and neglect, of brutalization by circumstances or oppression, etc., etc. And one of the worst of the destructive influences is the fact that a vast mass of people have no real vision. They may have blind belief, but that does not mean vision. So these are some of the influences at work, determining progressive change for us as human beings. Now, let us deal quite briefly with this question of needs. As essentially we are beings who have considerable development in terms of the psyche and the activity of the brain as such, our psychological needs should take central place, not in terms of importance as such, but in order that we may understand how the whole organism, the living organism, works. Our psychological needs become very important. Bodily needs, we know. Food, warmth, shelter. We quite understand what those words stand for. Then our psychological needs, happiness, security, love, peace of mind, at least a degree of success, a congenial job, quite an important psychological factor, and social acceptance. That is to say, we find our proper place in society, and so forth. These are some of the psychological influences at work. We won't deal with psycho-spiritual influences at the moment, anyway. But note the difference between bodily needs and psychological needs. Bodily needs are a case of matter-of-fact activity in the world of things and circumstance and so forth. And with respect to bodily needs, we can say, ah yes, that's enough food or it's not enough, that's enough warmth or not enough warmth, this is the right sort of house which will serve the man and his wife and his family, etc. We can deal with them somewhat in a considerably balanced manner on the whole. And we can just do this, do that, take it, leave it, and so forth. But with respect to psychological needs, this element of measurement, this element of balancing how much we need and so forth, is a very different matter altogether. The question, how much, is the wrong question. Because the fundamental fact remains that we long, there's a tremendous psychical longing, desire, deep desire, a passion, a longing for happiness, for love, for success. Success perhaps not so much, that is very much tied to worldly things. Security and so forth. See, there's an intense longing. And whilst we will talk about our physical needs in terms of, this much is enough or not enough, in terms of our psychological needs, we use phrases like this. We want complete security, perfect happiness, or shall I say everlasting happiness, perfect success, eternal love. Now notice the difference. With respect to bodily needs, we have just enough sense, not all of us, but I mean not all the world, but a good many, they have enough sense to realize that this is quite enough. If I keep on eating more, like the frog, I shall just burst. They do realize that. But with respect to these psychological needs, the whole approach is different. It's in terms of perfection, in terms of the infinite, the eternal, the immortal. So now, how is it with us in actual fact in our lives? We have some happiness, some love, and so on, you see, but also some lack of love, some lack of happiness, etc. Our actual life comes within the enclosed shell of duality. There is not a special problem of duality involved with physical needs. There is up to a point, but it can be dealt with. But with our psychological needs, in actual fact, there is this duality. So, we are aware, even if dimly, of a strong desire to go beyond the bounds of the limited and finite, towards the infinite and eternal, to move out of the imperfect and incomplete into the perfect and the complete. Now you see how this links up with the spiritual needs and aspirations. Because the full realization in terms of the spiritual, this complete transformation of our mode of awareness of existence, means that we are freed from bondage to the finite and the mortal, and that which is eternity, infinity, immortality, functions freely through us. We do not gain it. It takes us up into its own totality, into its own absoluteness. I mean, if one really can become conscious of this, then the whole task of the development of the individual has come to its culmination, its utter fulfillment. Now you see the absurdity of having nirvana or the kingdom of heaven or whatever it is as a goal. The infinite, the immortal, the eternal cannot be a anything. So you see the confusion in our mind, in our mental states, which is involved. Therefore we seek that which should never be sought. I've said 1,000 times, if I've said it once, can you seek for space? It's here, that you know from your real experience. It's everlastingly here, you can't seek it. It's here, not merely around you, different from you, it's in and through you. The actual physical body too. Space completely interpenetrates. What are you seeking? Where are you seeking? And space as space is characterless. It typifies, it is really representative of the eternal, the immortal, the infinite. The changeless and the ever-changing simultaneously. So now, we see here a progressive change, a growth out of the limited and imperfect, and an awakening into the conscious desire, at least, for the whole, for the totality. At this point, we could ask the question, in what manner are we conscious? Well, you all know all about that. We are conscious of objects as separate things, of people as all different people. We are separatively conscious where objects are concerned, isolatively conscious where human beings are concerned. That means we are unaware to any significant extent of the constant interrelationships and interactions between any and every single thing and person throughout the universe. And because of that, the self is one, the not self is the rest of the universe. What a marvelous disproportion. And there are 4,000 million other idiots like that who all function that way. What can we have but wars and strikes and rights and privileges and all the utter criminal lunacy which besets mankind? What can we have but an extraordinary load of unnecessary sorrow and suffering heaped upon us. There is sorrow and suffering which we cannot deal with. Earthquakes, volcanoes, floods, our charming winter this winter, and all that kind of, we can't do anything about it. We don't bring it about, at least as far as I know, you see. But this heap of unnecessary suffering and sorrow, which we fight against, which we dislike and so forth, and thereby perpetuate conflict, this is the thing that we can, with a little good sense and quiet perception, quietly observing in the true sense, we can deal with that and cleanse ourselves of it. Not by fighting against it, but by so completely understanding it that it has ceased to be a divisive influence, poisoning our lives. This is why the psychological aspect becomes so very important. When one begins to see that, and particularly when one's sense of transcendence begins to thrill instead of remaining asleep inside one, and one awakes consciously, in full consciousness, to that inner reality, then the whole of life undergoes transformation. Doesn't mean that pain won't come, or anything we dislike won't come, or that pleasure won't come, or anything that we like won't come. They will all come. But this inner transformation is the thing that has taken us out of the subhuman state into the fully human state. So this is a matter of the transformation of consciousness. And if one ever, and a great many people do have the experience, if one ever has the experience, somehow or other it comes upon one, the beauty of nature, or some moments when there is an extraordinary sensitivity from within which is functioning, and you feel this sense, this utter unity, a real unity, a matter-of-fact thing, not an ecstatic thing which makes you half crazy with it, but a matter-of-fact, calm, cool, and supremely happy thing. And you know once and for all that the entire universe is a unity. Your consciousness now has touched, at least during those moments, that state of unitary wholeness. And that unitary wholeness, the marvel and wonder of it, is the multitudinousness of the variety which composes that wholeness. The one is the many are the one. You see. So, when we return to ordinary, to our ordinary states, when the functioning of the senses and the brain bring us back to this state of separateness and isolatedness, then we remember that experience and we say, ah, why can't we maintain it? Is there a way so to live that that can be our natural and spontaneous state? This precisely is where religion comes in. So you will see that the word religion has very little, in its real sense, has very little relationship to conformity with certain laid down doctrines, teachings, disciplines and all the rest of it. Because then we strive for that which religion and our own sense of awakening sense of transcendence tells us. That which actually exists and functions in the context of immortality, eternity, infinity. And then what we ordinarily try to do here in our context, which is not the context of immortality, eternity and so on, is quite the wrong thing in so many ways. Don't try to chase God or Brahman or the Absolute or whatever to you is the supreme thing. Because if you are conscious in terms of isolativeness and separateness, there is no reality, no actuality in that supreme thing which is formulated, which is projected out of man's brain. The whole human race, with very, very rare exceptions, says we are the children of God and God is the creator. Actually, it is we who throw out of our own imperfect, absurd, confused minds, the picture of God. A picture, however attractive and beautiful, is something which is not changing. It is still. It is a corpse. It is dead. It's not the reality. The living reality is something utterly different. And a picture is a picture, not totality. So you see, the importance of this transformation of the mode of awareness and the importance of understanding that this mode of awareness, or if you like, your innermost consciousness, is the really important factor. And when you are really conscious of something, the right thing is done through oneself, by eternity itself, by infinity itself, by God himself, etc. Not you or I who does all these things. It is that. So one has to learn to distinguish between the particular and finite from that which is not particular, not finite, of separate being from total non-being. But don't misinterpret this to mean being is something different from non-being. Non-being and totality completely subsume, completely hold within themselves the particular, the finite and the mortal. If that were not the case, there'd be no possibility of release of consciousness out of the bondage to the limited, the mortal, the suffering, into that state where consciousness is utterly free, utterly pure. And that is universal always. It is not a case of I have consciousness. Consciousness, like the word mind, is in its actuality universal. The separateness comes in terms of our being aware through the functioning of the physical senses and the brain, which have not yet changed progressively and realized their full culmination in terms of perfect humanity. When that is realized, you are truly the Son of Man, the Son of Mind. And the Son of Mind means the son of that which is total, that which is eternal and infinite, which is perfection itself, and therefore is identical with the term Son of God. It's rather strange I should end on that note today, 6th of April. Some of the latest scholarship has presented the 6th of April as the date on which Jesus was crucified. And today is Friday, the 6th of April.